Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's class time. Over you with Rodney Lee Conover. It's got the preacher.
I think this is Jerry Lewis.
I hope not. If everybody sent in 25 cents that never wanted to see Jerry Lewis on TV again, I think they'd cure muscular dystrophy.
Isn't that the truth? Well, we do, Rodney. We got a great show coming on tonight. Like that Magic Carpet Ride, some Steppenwolf. Do like the Steppenwolf. And we are going to have a little mini Jerry Lewis telethon tonight. We're not going to be raising money for muscular dystrophy, but we're going to be raising money for something to fix the ills of our country. And let me tell you, we got some great candidates running around the country right now. We've got some that really, really need our support. And then we got some candidates that, you know, we want them to win, but that's okay. But Michael Dreykorn is at the top of the list. He is one of the best candidates I've seen in a long time. He's serious about what he does. I am a firm believer that when he gets to the Senate in Tallahassee, he's going to do what he says he's going to do, and he's going to do it with fervor, and he's going to do it with fight. And that's what we need, especially Florida needs, let me tell you, folks. But we've also got some great guests on tonight. We should be having Joe the Plumber come on, as he always does in the beginning. And then we're going to also have discussion with Jennifer Cabney again. She was on last week. I had a great discussion. Going to talk about marriage. Going to talk about some important issues. And I understand we're going to talk about some scripture right on. Because let me tell you, that old Bible, it'll help fix a lot of your ills in society. And then we're also going to be bringing at the end of the show again, as we do each week, Dr. Brownstein, Rodney's doctor of 10 years, has seen the effects of Obamacare from the side of the physician, from the side of the room. You know, the doctor comes into the room and he says, "Levy, hey, how you doing? How can I help you?" And boy, the government wants to step in there and get in the way. And he's going to have some great things. We're going to talk a little bit about depression tonight. Got Robin Williams still on our minds, and we're going to have a great show about that. So that's our show for tonight, Roddy. It's going to be great, as always. Looking forward to it. And then you and I talking politics, and I promise I won't cry.
That's the show, and he says, "Rodney's quoting scripture. Hold on. Stop, everybody." So it's great. Listen, we got to get right to it because there's people calling in already on the mini telethon for Michael Dreykorn, who will be calling in here any minute now. But Scott and I want to set this up. Listen, there is a race going on in Florida, and this is of the utmost importance, and it's just got a lot more utmost importanter, and I'll tell you why. Because it's a Republican primary. Now, it's a state Senate race in Florida, Florida State Senate. It's a Republican primary, and the vote takes place on August 26th. Now, if I click my little thing here, that tells me it's Tuesday, August 26th, which is about 5 or 6 days from now. But, why am I going crazy, Scott? Well, I don't know, Rodney, why are you going crazy? Well, I'll tell you why, Scott. Because I have learned something. Who says you can't teach an old dog new tricks? Well, you can. Here's my new trick. Florida state law, campaign law, says that you cannot raise money for this particular primary past midnight tonight. So this is the last day we can raise money for Michael Dreykorn. Now, why is that important? Well, because he's running against an incumbent, and not just any incumbent. And I would call her a rhino, but guess what? I found out that she's not a rhino. I mean, just it just keeps coming, Scott. Information about this person, this state representative, Lizbeth Beniquisto, keeps coming out. And there's a bombshell. There's a bombshell. She's not a rhino. She's a Democrat, it turns out. She's in a Republican primary. She calls herself a Republican. She is an incumbent, so she is listed as a Republican. But guess what? Well, I'll tell you what. Her husband is a huge fundraiser, a gigantic I heard the largest bundler for guess who? Hillary Clinton. My word, I was trying to now, Scott, tell me I'm wrong. I was racking my brains for the past 2 months trying to figure out why she was for Common Core. Why isn't she doing anything about, the implementation of Obamacare in Florida? Why is she, tricking the voters into implementing Common Core in Florida? She got the name change. She got them to, vote for its implementation. There are all kinds of shenanigans. Why is she doing that? She's a Republican. Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag. Her husband raises tons and tons and tons of money for Hillary Clinton. My God, these are Democrats. These aren't rhinos. We got a whole new thing here. And tonight at midnight is the cutoff date. So that's why we're doing a mini telethon for Michael Dreykorn. And we're going to talk more about this woman. She is what's her title, Scott? Would she be the president of the Senate? Is that her official title? President of the State Senate in Florida? Help me out here with that, because I get confused, as you know.
She's the Senate Majority Leader there in Tallahassee.
Senate Majority Leader in Tallahassee, which is the capital of Florida, for all you people that don't know your capitals. I know that even your youngest child there at home there, Scott, knows all her capitals because I've heard her do them. And Tallahassee is the state capital. A lot of shenanigans going on there because the majority leader of the state Senate is this Lizbeth Beniquisto. We thought she's a Republican. Turns out she's not. My God, they're raising money for Hillary Clinton. So this is not just, this is not your father's Oldsmobile here. This campaign just took on more national implications, even more so than it did a week or a month ago, because now we're not just defeating a horrible, horrible Republican, state senator. We're not just defeating a horrible Republican majority leader who is steering just all these terrible things and just blanketing Florida families and Florida children with Common Core. And, I mean, to the point where the biggest and most badass anti-Common Core group, I think they're called Stop Common Core Florida, they're massive. They are not only endorsing our guy, Michael Dreykorn. That's not no more than that. They actually take her to task. I mean, they go out of their way to show up to events where she's at. They go crazy on her, chastising her in the press for all the shenanigans. And Michael can explain that in more detail. But trust me, we got to win this election because it's a defeat, not just for the Republican establishment, but a defeat for the Hillary and for the Clinton machine. I mean, this will be a gigantic defeat. Imagine, Scott, you still there, or did I bore you to tears?
I am here.
Okay, imagine if we can beat one of Hillary's big fundraising guys, I mean, this will be incredible. I mean, she's obviously raised, you know, so much more than Michael Dreykorn possibly. The only people we raise money from are individuals, and so we're asking you tonight to help us out. Send a couple bucks to Michael Dreykorn. We're going to be asking like crazy, and talk about a good cause. You know what? I'm going to go right now, buddy. I'm going to go right now to our buddy Dan Wilson, who lives in Florida. Now, I know that he lives on the Gulf Coast, but I'm not sure if he lives in Michael Dreykorn's district or not. You live in the 30th district, Dan? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, and sadly I don't, but my father does.
Okay,
and
well,
I've already brought
close
in
enough.
About 50 new people. So
that's awesome. Now, what can you tell me about this Lisbeth Benacristo?
Well, first of all, she's in the district next to the Wicked Witch of the South. What's her name? Head of the Democratic Party.
Whoever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, her husband is, you know, one of the top fundraisers for the Hillary, the murderess, I should say. And what they're trying to do is they know they can't attack from where I am in the Tampa area, north, because we're predominantly conservative, but she can attack from the south. And Michael, being in the southwest, his district goes from Punta Gorda, Charlotte area, down to Port Everglades, I think, and the southwestern region. And he's our only hope. We need somebody who is going to spread the truth, is going to defeat Common Core. Us up here, we just don't have enough reinforcements. I've written to Governor Scott a million times on this. I was appalled when my granddaughter came home from school and I looked at her math questions. And I was like, what the heck is this crap? And it's like, I am appalled. Here we are.
It's incredible.
You know.
It's incredible that a woman like that, who so fervently supports Common Core, not just thinks it's a good idea, but is willing to go to the lengths that she has gone, actually changing the name of Common Core in order to fool Florida voters into, hey, we're implementing this other thing. It's not Common Core. It's got a new name. Dan, I'm going to put you on hold real quick. I'm going to come back to you. And I got an announcement to make here tonight. Breaking news, Scott. The Tea Party community, one of the largest, if not the largest, Tea Party organizations in the United States, they're massive, our buddy Tim Saletti over there, they have endorsed Michael Dreykorn for Florida Senate District 30, and it just happened today. Guess what? They are broadcasting this very show live on the TPC Network. I want to welcome everybody on the Tea Party Community Network. It's similar to Facebook, only it's not, you know, evil. It's actually a really good internet site where people of like minds or whoever can get together and as a community and exchange ideas and whatnot. So the Tea Party Community Radio Network is broadcasting us live tonight, Scott. Isn't that great? We probably doubled our audience. Are you still there? I'm always wondering.
I sure am. I just had myself on mute. You know how that goes. It is great. And Tea Party community and Pundit Press both give us a lot of support and broadcast a lot of our shows. And we want to remind everybody, go to teapartycommunity.com, sign up. It's a great place to post information. There's great patriots in there. And go to Pundit Press. Go to punditpress.com. There's some great articles being there. Our own Dan Wilson, who just spoke with us, he has his articles posted there. And Tea Party Community and Pundit Press both broadcasting our shows, both live and in Memorex. We like that. And we really appreciate that support.
Well, I'm going to go to someone now. A friend of both of ours is on the line, Jennifer Montrose. I'm going to go to her and ask her if she has any insight, because she's been a political conservative activist for dozens and dozens of years. And Jennifer, if you're there, and do you, tell me, what is going on in Florida? And explain this whole thing where we can possibly have, and you're over there in the south, in the southeast portion of the country, how can we possibly have someone in the majority of the Republican state Senate in Florida whose husband is a major fundraiser for Hillary Clinton? How does that even happen?
I can tell you. Oh, by the way, hi, y'all. This is Jennifer Montrose from Alabama. I just want to say, you know, I was at a Republican women's luncheon today, and we were had a really good speaker that's a teacher, school teacher, talking about Common Core, Chastity White, and she talks about how, you know, people just are afraid to talk about the subject of Common Core. Teachers especially are concerned about losing their jobs. People are getting paid. You know, teachers are not being brought into the subject matter when they're talking about Common Core. And there's so much backroom deals being made. And that is a lot of what you see happening in Florida. We have so much corruption, you know, and stuff that's going on, and people are burying their heads in the sand. And then there are some people that don't even know that they need to be aware. You know, you've got families working several jobs trying to make ends meet, you know, and they're relying on their school system, you know, to do for them, you know, to take care of their children. And we need somebody like Michael Drakehorn, who is going to stand up and fight to repeal Common Core, to take it out. It needs to be gone in every single state in the United States.
Well, as I understand it, in Florida, there's been several attempts to implement Common Core. The people, to the extent that they're able to, push back on it, fight back on it, and when these legislators are found out, you know, then they jump through, hoops trying to say, oh, you know, we weren't implementing it. Not that, you know, it was just this and that. It wasn't really the standards. And then they changed the name of it, and they try to implement it again.
Oh, of course.
There's amendments, and there's all these shenanigans, and it takes somebody like a Jennifer Montrose or some other activist to bring it to the people's attention and then stop Common Core Florida and some other groups, the Lee County Tea Party or Lee County Patriots or anyone associated with Michael Drakehorn, to bring it to the forefront and say, look, not only is the incumbent, this Lizbeth Montecristo or whatever her name is, not only is she trying to, in the most covert and sneaky, I'm just going to call her sneaky because that's what she is. She's sneaky. Now, let me ask you, Jennifer. Who runs as a Republican when their husband is a major fundraiser for Hillary Clinton? Now, you're going to tell me that they, what, do they live separate lives? How does that happen?
I mean, sounds to me like she read the book, Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals.
Well, you know what? You're right. It does stink of that. Paul, is Scott there? Is he crying over this? Because he could very well be crying over this. Jennifer, I'm going to put you on hold, but hang in there, okay? Scotty, what's going on here?
I am crying over it. And let me tell you, you know, Rodney, you gave the one side. I'm going to show the polar opposite of this. You know, we've got a candidate on one side that's an incumbent that obviously needs to go, and then we've got a candidate that is so far the other direction of being such a good candidate that we know is going to go up and fight. Michael Drakehorn has placed Common Core at the centerpiece of his candidacy, of his election. He has placed the Constitution at the center of his election. He is ready to go and fix some of these things, not just endorse some of these things. And that's the problem we're having. You know, they want to rename Common Core. Right now, the polls are shifting. Let me tell you, folks, we got some really, really good news in the last couple of weeks. A majority of teachers have decided that they don't like Common Core. a majority of the parents have decided they don't like Common Core. And it was a couple of months ago that the polls came out, the majority of the kids don't like Common Core. But they're still trying to push it through. And, you know, we're going to talk with the doctor at the end of the show. But you know, I'm going to tell you, Common Core is the Obamacare of education. And anytime you try and nationalize, anytime you try and do the same thing, cookie-cutter process all the way along, I don't care if it was a good program, that's a bad idea. But we look deeper into Common Core. We're going to let Michael talk about Common Core. He'll give us some words about Common Core. But we need more people fighting. And let me tell you, folks, we get Michael Dreikorn into the Florida State Senate. And we've got one more fighter to fight against this insanity. We got one more fighter to fight against Obamacare instead of having one that is fighting for Obamacare. One more fighter to fight for the Constitution, for our freedoms, for our liberty, and all those things that we talk about each day. I want to encourage everybody right now to go to michaeldreikorn.com. That's Dreikorn, michaeldreikorn.com. If you go to the, if you're looking at the page right now, if you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, if you go to the page, there's two links there. There's one for his Facebook page, and there is one for his website. Go to his website. It's the top link. It's where it says Michael Dreikorn. It's got a little underline underneath it. Click on that. Go and donate some money. Like Rodney said, we're coming up against the hard break against the money. He's got until midnight tonight to raise money. This is the last push. Give some money if you can. If you can't, give your time. Let's push this thing across the finish line. Not only that, let me tell you, folks, if Michael Dreikorn wins this, it is going to make the national news. And it's going to be another Eric Cantor story. It's going to be another story, just like a lot of different candidates across the country who have been pushing hard to push out those that aren't going to get up and fight and stand up for what's right. We're tired of candidates that are just running around all the time doing the money. And let me make sure. There we go. And so with that, Rodney, I will go ahead and pass it back to you.
Well, let me say one other thing just to piggyback on that. And we do have Michael joining the show here within seconds here. But
he's right here.
Hi, Michael. Let me say one more thing. Michael hasn't raised money from companies or PACs. You know, he's not that kind of candidate. He is a conservative, and they can't control him. Yeah, they can't come in and say, okay, buddy, here's $1,000 and, you know, here's what we'd like you to do. Michael would laugh at him because, you know, Michael's a gentleman. He's not the type of guy to go out and attack this incumbent who is at best a Democrat in sheep's clothing. And there's much worse. But I'm not a gentleman, okay? So I'm saying go to Michael's website and, you know, he's got this little tiny donate button. Click that donate button. 5, 10, and for those of you who really, listen, I can state an even better case, okay? We don't have to think too far back to get back to the year 2000. Why is the year 2000 important to this telethon and to Michael Dreikorn? I'll tell you why. Because in the year 2000, the state of Florida decided who was president. And I don't think it could get any closer than that election, and I don't think it could get any closer than the vote in Florida to the point that where they were picking up each individual ballot and looking at them under the microscope to see if the chads had fallen through, or if they'd poked through, or if they're legal ballots or not legal ballots. They had to hand count this thing. That's how close it was. That's how important Florida is. Now, if they return somebody like this Lizbeth Benacristo back to the Republican majority, you have in Florida, running the state Senate, basically a Democrat because her husband is the major fundraiser for Hillary. So come the year 2016, that is one more giant arrow in the Hillary for president quiver. And I hesitate to use the word Hillary and quiver in the same sentence, but I'm sorry, it just came out that way. But I'm serious. You have an entire state machine now working for Hillary, and we know how important the state of Florida is in a national election. It's huge. It's not just a swing state. It's a state that if you look on a map, it looks like it's pissing on Cuba. That's how important Florida is, okay? So we got to get somebody else in there, a pro-Constitution, pro-Second Amendment, anti-Common Core, somebody who will go in there and not take any crap off anybody, and I'm telling you who it is. He's here right now. Mr. Michael Drycorn, how are you?
Hey, Rodney, I'm doing great, my friend. I'm doing great. I'm here. I'm live, and I'm armed, and I'm having a great time in South Florida.
That was an introduction, my friend, if I do say so myself.
Well, you did say so, and it was. It certainly was. You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm you know, I do subscribe to Reagan's 11th Commandment. You know, I'll never speak ill of another fellow Republican. And, you know, it is questionable whether or not my opponent is a Republican. But, you know, I'm just going to speak on issues. I'm going to speak on the real statistics of the vote. You know, this is the individual that introduced Senate Bill 1076 in 2013, which probably means nothing to your listeners, but let me tell you what it was. It was the bill that later became law that made Common Core the law in Florida. And that is just frankly wrong. That has to be reversed. And I'm the guy to do it.
Well, that's really good to hear, because the details is what we need from you. And I meant what I said before. You're a gentleman, and I know you're not going to go after your opponent. It's not your job. Your job is to state the facts and then go in there, get elected, and then do your job. And that's what we're looking for in any leader, in any representative, any elected leader. And I'm going to go to some callers now, and if they have questions, and I want to encourage everybody, especially from the Tea Party Community Network, who are now broadcasting us live in addition to Blog Talk Radio and the Pundit Press. Wow, we got one heck of an audience, don't we, Scott Osborne? In the short time, I don't know how long we've been doing this, Conover, you just a couple months? And boy, we got a potential 8 million person network. So that's pretty awesome.
That speaks to the power of the message, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just humbling. And I encourage everybody to call in at 347-205-9620. That's 347-205-9620. And we don't have to have an 800 number, because y'all got cell phones. It doesn't cost you anything. And if it costs you something, I don't care. Call in anyway. 347-205-9620. And since this is a mini telethon, and I have to kind of defer to the preacher on this one, Scott, so get ready. Since we are doing a mini telethon, don't we have to do like some entertainment once in a while in between ranting about politics? Shouldn't I be singing and tap dancing at some point?
I was just about ready to say, as long as you tell jokes and don't sing, because I've never heard you sing, and I'm not quite sure if we might want to do that in the background first.
Okay, maybe.
That's right, it is a mini telethon. And I'll tell you, folks, it is going to be a little bit of entertainment, and it is going to be a little bit serious. You know, Rodney, teasing me, because I say we laugh and we cry sometimes. But we're looking at a future of our country that's very important, and every step is important. And this is one step, and that's why I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to say it until my tongue falls off. Go to michaeldrycorn.com and push that donate button. We've got until midnight. Let's get the last funds in there. Give him the last push. He's got a great team. My good friend Ken Boland's at the head of that team. I've got full confidence in him. I know you guys have been working hard. And, Michael, I just want to ask you a question. As you've been on the campaign trail, you've really made Common Core a big centerpiece in your campaign. What are the people, when you're running into the Daily Joe, the Daily Sue, as you're running around and doing your campaign, what are they saying about Common Core? Are they understanding your message? Are they understanding why you fight so hard against Common Core?
Well, you know, I find that the people that actually have children in the school system get it. They're aware of it. They're absolutely frustrated about what's coming down the pike for them. But remember, we're also a very senior community here. So some of the more senior citizens we have around here, they're not so up to speed in what's going on. But when I explain it to them, when I explain just how bad Common Core is and what it means to the institutionalization of socialism in our society. We're no longer going to be uniquely American. We're going to be something different, something blah. They get it and they get concerned. And I say, hey, it's already the law. And I tell them how we're attached to the race to the top dollars and how it flows down to the states and then to the counties. They're going, so what can we do? I say, easy. We can repeal it in one legislative session. And in Florida, we have a part-time legislature. So the senators and the representatives, they go to Tallahassee for 2 months out of the year. And that happens in the early spring. And that is when we have the opportunity to put the bills on the table and fight hard to get these things through. In 2014, Common Core did not even get a hearing in the state of Florida.
That is incredible. And, it's just indicative of what we've been talking about all along. Michael, I'm going to, once again, I just want to repeat the phone number so people know where to call in. It's 347-205-9620. There's a ton of people in the chat room. Feel free to pick up the phone and give us a call live. I know you're in the chat room for a reason. You want to stay, anonymous. But this is a special night, a special telethon, never done, before done on Conover U, and I feel pretty excited about it. And I'm going to go to Dan Wilson if he has a question for Michael. Dan, are you there? And what's your question for Michael?
Hi, Michael. Great to talk to you again.
Dan is a Floridian, by the way, I believe. So.
Yeah. Last time I knew I was.
Yeah.
last time I I have vested interest in this because my granddaughter, goes to school up here in Pasco County. And I just can't believe I've been calling Rick Scott. I've been emailing him, writing to him. I mean, I've done everything possible. And he lies through his teeth when it comes to Common Core, that he won't allow it, And then earlier this year, he endorsed it. And, we have to put pressure on him because we're basically stuck between him and Chris when it comes to the gubernatorial election. And are you planning to really just kind of put the pressure on Scott, and how do you plan to change the minds of our teachers, and so that they'll jump on board and get rid of this atrocity that's infesting our state?
Great questions, Dan. And you're right. So if you have an executive leader in the state that that currently supports Common Core, which we do, so the question is what can the legislature do? Because the legislature can only put bills on the governor's desk to be signed, and if he's not willing to sign it, what good is the legislature? Well, if we send the message on Tuesday and replace the Senate Majority Leader, who has essentially been handpicked by Jeb Bush and the establishment to do their bidding, with somebody who actually listens to the people, who's not a career politician, if we do that on next Tuesday here in Florida, that's going to send a very, very loud message to the establishment, to the leadership in Tallahassee. And that will allow me, between next Tuesday and when we get back up to the next session, to do a lot of legwork, essentially convincing the leadership they're on the wrong side. So how do you do that? You do that with the masses of the people. It's time to get people energized. It's time to get the buzz going on, not just in Florida, but across the country, that enough is enough. And these people that are in the leadership positions of the different parties, they need to start listening, because if they don't listen, their heads are going to roll, and we're going to make it happen.
What can we do Well, let me ask you a different question. What is the deal? I've read a couple of things about this Common Core in Florida, and it's fascinating because it's so sneaky. There's just sneakiness going on around there, and I can't figure it out, and I'm sure you have a better handle on it. Explain to our listeners this thing that has happened where they tried to – they made it the law of the land, and then, of course, there's a giant pushback. Nobody wants it. And then they repeal it, and they amended it, and then – or something. And then they changed the name of it and tried to get it jammed through again. Explain that, you know, like give me the Reader's Digest version of that, because that is unreal to me, what I read.
Well, frankly, I mean, you know, in our American society, you know, we have the memory of a goldfish. So, you know, if something is a big deal today, next week it's old news. And so if somebody is able to take something that smells really bad and rebrand it so it looks pretty good, put a new package on it, you know, people are going to forget about how bad that other thing was because this one looks pretty good. So they're counting. They're absolutely putting all their chips on the fact that most voters aren't going to pay attention, that it's simply the old stuff that's been rebranded. But the reality is there's nothing in the content of the legislation that has changed. Common Core is Florida Sunshine Standards, and it's the same absolute thing. Now, the way it got into our state is sneaky. Now, if you remember, it was the race to the top. You know, when 47 states took the money, you know, there was three smart states that didn't. And then, you know, it was Virginia, it was Alaska, and I believe it was Nebraska. They didn't take the money, but 47 other states took the money for the race to the top. And one of the conditions was when this later defined Common Core comes around, the state has to take it. It has to accept the Common Core, even though at that time Common Core hadn't been detailed in what it is. You know, and then you know, so that was the hook. The hook is not a federal mandate per se. You know, it's not coming down from the Department of Education. It's coming through the terms and conditions of taking that money. The states are addicted, like heroin, to federal money, and they take it so eagerly, they don't pay attention to the consequences. That's where we need to put people in positions of authority and responsibility and representation that actually read the terms and conditions of the federal money. And they have the intestinal fortitude, the pushback, and the vision, being able to see beyond just this next quarter or next year, but able to see 10 years down the road, what are the implications of taking this money? And can we renegotiate a different deal so that we preserve the sovereignty of our state? You know, the 10th Amendment, it says that all the powers that are not described in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution remain that of the state. Education's not in there. Education is a state issue, not a federal issue.
That is completely nutty that they would pass something, and then when they were caught, you know, with their hand in the Common Core jar, the federal money jar, they would change it. And what did they call it, the sunshine something? What was that?
Yeah, the Florida Sunshine Standards.
Yeah, they just changed the name.
They're pumping some sunshine.
Yeah, they should put it where the sun don't shine. They try to pass it. It's unbelievable that they would do that. I mean,
so here's the challenge, though, Rod. Here's the challenge, is that the GOP establishment here in Florida has given my opponent, just since May, $150,000 to campaign against me. Now,
well,
in total, she spent over almost $900,000 to campaign against a non-political. I'm not a professional politician. I'm a business guy that lives on Pine Island. You know, a guy that just came out of the woodwork. They're spending over $1 million to beat me.
Well, also, they're not getting any money from individuals. I know that. If you look at their
very little,
they don't have people backing her. I mean, the people are against her. It's just—it's a matter. It's a simple matter of getting the word out. And Scott Osborne, let me bring you in here. And speaking of getting the word out, it's time to go to our virtual tote board. In other words, I need Scott to come in here and give that website again. Scott, what do you got?
That's right. We want to remind everybody, please, I'm begging, and anybody that knows me knows that the one thing I hate to do is ask for money. And I don't ask for money very often for a candidate. A lot of times I'll do a lot of other things. But when a candidate is exceptional, and, you know, Michael, don't be bringing common sense into this discussion. You know, when was the last time, folks, you had a candidate or an elected official, for that matter, who talked about the implications of something that might happen? They just do everything and then say, well, whatever happens, happens. We'll see how it goes. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, we got to pass it, and then we'll find out what's in it. That kind of mentality. Folks, I've said this a zillion times on the show, and I'm going to say it again. I've been saying this for years. Michael's conservative. Him and I agree on probably almost everything when it comes to the issues. That is not enough for me. We need candidates that will go in there and fight and will stand up for what they believe in no matter what. We've got, and Michael said it exactly, the most important part. He's not a politician. He's a businessman. And he wants to go in there and do the right thing. And Michael's got the character, folks. I know him well enough to know he's got the character. When he goes in to into Tallahassee, and he starts facing the den of the lions, and they're gonna first thing they're gonna do is start trying to hand him money. Here, Michael, I need you to vote this way on this bill. Here's some extra money. We all know how that works. Michael has got the character to stand up and say, I'm gonna vote for what I believe. And that's what we need. I know another character from California who used to be running in the 8th District that I supported for the exact same reason, because I had full confidence that Rodney Lee Conover, if he had gotten to Congress, would stand up and do exactly what was important and what was right and not just end up playing the political game like everybody else. So please, go to that website. Go to MichaelDreichorn.com and give a little bit of money. Give $5, give $10, give $20. If you can give the maximum amount, give the maximum amount. This is about our future. Michael's talking about what Florida is going to be like in 10 years. How are the implications going to be? How are the finances going to affect that? And with that, Rodney Lee, there's my rant. I'll pass it back to you.
Michael,
I'm
going to
jump in as you pass it, though.
Oh, go right ahead.
I'm going to jump in. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not just about Florida, though. We need to lead by example in this country. And if I'm able to do this in Florida, we can do this in every state. Because we it's very difficult to influence what happens in Washington, D.C. But if the 50 states have solid conservative leadership, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, an independent, a libertarian, a Tea Party, a Veterans Party. It doesn't matter. If you're conservative and you believe in God, right? This is the righteous path, folks. So the question is what am I going to do with the money you donate tonight? Because frankly, folks, we only have a couple of hours left to take the money. 3 hours and 18 minutes to be precise. What I'm going to do with that money is I'm going to get out the vote. We rarely have more than 20% of our local voters showing up to the poll. That means there's 80% potential out there for me to get out and get those people to the poll. I need to get more people engaged in knocking on doors. I need to buy some more printed material. I need to make sure that the people have rides to the polls. I'm doing this the old style, folks. We're getting the shoe leather out, and we're meeting people one at a time. But I need to be able to amplify my voice, and it's not free. You know, I have put just about every personal financial resource I have into this, and I believe that's what we're supposed to do. When God calls us to do something, we sacrifice, and I need you now to help me help us, because we can win this, and we can change the direction of our country. I am so worried about what's going to happen in 2016, and Roddy, take us from there, from 2016, what's going to happen?
Well, listen, if Hillary Clinton is elected president, I'm starting to hear now that it will be an improvement over Barack Obama. Well, at least it isn't Barack Obama. Ladies and gentlemen, wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. It's crazy talk to think that Hillary Clinton will be an improvement over Barack Obama. This is the woman who, as Secretary of State, stood at the unloading of a corpse of a young
Navy SEAL who was protecting the lives or trying to protect the lives of our ambassadors in Benghazi who defied orders to stand down and went and saved the lives of dozens of Americans, lost his own life in the ordeal. And as his body was being offloaded, Hillary Clinton stood next to his parents, knowing the truth of that attack, and said to them, "We're going to get the guy that made that video." Knowing the full truth of the Benghazi attacks, knowing that that YouTube video had nothing to do with it, that's what she said to this kid's parents. Now, that may sound like a small thing, and you may be able to come up with all kinds of, rigmarole to discount that, but that is a microcosm. That is a look into her brain, and it says this: she will do or say anything. She is not to be trusted. She has never accomplished a thing in her life. She is perfectly willing, able, happy to allow her beautiful young daughter to be completely humiliated in public by her husband, and rather than calling him out at all, just standing by for her own political aspirations, she puts herself in front of her own daughter's emotional well-being. That's the kind of person that you think is going to be better than Barack Obama. No. No, no, no. This is not someone we want to be president at all. Would you let, if you were going to go in and get your heart operated, let's say you needed a heart bypass, and all of a sudden the surgeon's wife walked in, and you said, "Wait a minute, where's the surgeon?" And he said, "Well, it's okay, I'm his wife." And he said, "Well, wait a minute. I want the surgeon, I want my doctor to do it. Oh, don't, that's okay, I'm going to perform the operation. I watched my husband do it for 8 years. Would you allow that woman to operate on you? Of course you wouldn't. But that's what we're talking about with Hillary being president. Where are the qualifications? She's less qualified than Barack Obama, if that's possible. You think about it. She is less qualified. And the things that she has done, let's just take Secretary of State. To call that a failure is such an understatement. That's like saying the Hindenburg hit a speed bump. That's like saying, I don't know what it's like. I can't even come up with the words anymore. But no, you don't want Hillary Clinton as your president. She will take what we have and make it even worse. I mean, the most we can hope for is that you have a massive majority in the Senate and the House to offset her like we did in the 90s with Bill Clinton. But remember the precedent that Barack Obama has set with executive orders. Remember keep in mind the new land that we live in, where the president just says, "Well, I don't like that law, so I'm not going to enforce it. Well, I don't like this part of the law, so I'm going to rewrite it. Well, I don't really like this, so I'm not going to do it." That's where we live now. And that's why every stake in the vampire that is Hillary Clinton, we need to pound in. Do you like that example that I just gave there, Michael? I know you can't give that example.
We need to pound a stake
into the heart of that giant 2016 campaign. And this is a big one, folks. Getting Michael in there in the Florida State Senate is a big one, because I am telling you right now, this woman, and again, Michael's too much of a gentleman to say this, but this woman, Lizbeth Benequisto, she was a registered Democrat voter in Broward County. Okay? Her husband is a major, major Hillary fundraiser. They have ties to the Clinton machine that are thick. Okay? It's crazy. Now, I know Ronald Reagan was once a Democrat, but at least he came forward and said, "Look, I didn't leave the Democrat Party. It left me." Well, the Democrat Party didn't leave Ms. Benequisto. The Democrat Party is alive and well in that household. And the Republican establishment is shoveling hundreds of thousands of dollars at her. So the least you could do was maybe cough up a couple of bucks over to my man, Michael Dreykorn. Now, Michael.
Yeah.
Sorry about that long rant, but you know me. I get excited.
No, I absolutely. And you know, Rodney, the reality is that we need to start leading by example, which means we need to have leaders up there that are good examples. We need to have leaders that can provide inspiration to our communities so that our communities become, again, engaged in the political process. When we have total disengagement, which we have now in the American society, we get what we have. It's time for get real leaders engaged again that understand that the art of communication is to not only provide a message, but it's to educate your fellow voters so that they understand what citizenship means and that they recognize the risks that are present and absolutely imminent with regards to the degradation of our liberties and freedoms. That is what I aim to provide. I aim to provide, you know, intestinal fortitude on the Senate floor to ensure that our constitutional rights are secured. I aim to ensure that the federal government backs off the states, and that when the federal government executive branch fails to do their job, the consequences of which should not be suffered by the state. Right now, it continues with that border issue. You know, we're not hearing a whole lot of it because there's been other distractions recently. You know, but you know, there's been this thing going on in St. in Missouri. We had this unfortunate beheading in the Middle East. You know, those things have kind of subdued all of these things about what's going on with the border babies. Guess where they're going? They're not going to some magical place called the federal government. They're going to a neighborhood near you, regardless of which state you're in. So we need to have leaders in place that won't take their eye off the ball. There is a lot of risk out there. We need to identify it, keep it on our radar screen, and start mitigating it.
This problem here is just, it just is blowing my mind. This thing in Florida is just unbelievable. I don't know how we get someone running the state Senate who is married to someone, you know, like this Bruce Strayhorn, who is an ultra-liberal Democrat, raising money for Hillary, and then when she loses to Obama, jumping on the Obama bandwagon. And you're going to tell me that that's a better pick than Michael Dreykorn? No, it is not. There is a reason, folks, that they are shoveling hundreds of thousands of dollars at this woman, because we got us a solid guy. We got somebody that's going into battle for us, leading. That's why. They wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't a big-time threat. And we got to get over the finish line here. And guess when the finish line is? Tonight at midnight. Listen, it's about 3 hours away. So I think that's plenty of time. You know, while you're thinking of it, Scott Osborne, why don't you come forward here and help me out? While you're thinking of it, folks... And I don't know, maybe you're going to go out and get a steak dinner later or tomorrow, or maybe you're going to go out to dinner sometime this weekend. Why don't you go to, what is the grocery store in Florida there? Some Ralph or something?
Public.
Winn-Dixie. Here's what you do. Instead of going over to Ditka's, if that's still open, the steak joint, go to Winn-Dixie and pick up one of those yummy chickens. They're like $5.90, those cooked chickens. Boy, I like those. I can eat a whole chicken right now. And send the 50 or 80 or 100 bucks over to Michael Dreykorn. What do they do with it, Scott Osborne? Help me out here website-wise. I'm bad with the WWs. Are you there, buddy?
I am here, and I'll tell you, folks, all you got to do is go to the link on the blog talk page. If you go to the first Michael Dreykorn, you'll see it's highlighted. You got a little line under it. It'll take you straight to the website. Go to that donate button and look around while you're there. See what Michael's all about. Michael has got some clear laid out solutions in order to fix some of the ills that we've got that we're heading into right now. There's other situations. You know, we've talked a lot about Common Core. Water is an important situation in Florida, just as it is here in Texas. Michael has got some solutions on that. Michael's got all kinds of great things to look at on that website. So go there, hit that donate button. And, folks, I know everybody can't do that. If you can't do that, please, this last week, especially this last 6 days, get in there and share the information. If you've got friends down in that district, get down in there. Call them if you're not there. If you're next door, talk to your friends and get the word out. This is so important. We can make a big difference with this election. This isn't just any other state senatorial election. We see those all the time. Like Rodney has said, this is an important one that could really make a difference. It could have ramifications all the way across the country, not only to some of the issues that we're facing right now, but political ramifications, a little bit of a tidal wave going there. Remember when Eric Cantor all of a sudden woke up one morning and decided, oh, I'm out of a job. There was a ripple effect, and we want to see that. It's so important. Michael, I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about a couple of the other issues, and water is an important one. It's an important in Florida. It's important in Texas. It's important in California. You've got some water issues down there, and you've got some solutions and want to make that first and foremost in some of the things you do. So I want to hand it to you to talk a little bit about the Florida water situation.
Well, thank you, Scott. I mean, yeah, so I mean, water is one of the main reasons people even come to Florida, right? We're surrounded by water the entire coast, you know, through east and west, the entire peninsula of Florida surrounded by water. And we also have one of the largest lakes in the entire country. It's, you know, it's the Okeechobee. You know, but the problem is our challenge is not necessarily, you know, the lack of water. It's actually we have an abundance of it, and we as man, we have modified the flow of that water, and we have been adding all kinds of nutrients to the water through our fertilizers and other you know, aspects of civilization. And over the decades, you know, man has made a very nasty footprint in Florida. We're having brown water come down our Caloosahatchee River that's changing the solidity levels in our brackish waters in the harbors, affecting our fisheries. Now we're having algae blooms that are the size of Rhode Island, you know, that hit our coast and kill our tourism. So water is not only an ecology issue for us, it's an economy issue. So if our water is no longer, you know, the clear, clean water that people believe that exists in Florida, people are no longer going to want to come here. That's going to kill our real estate values. It's going to kill our job situation. And part of that is just the bureaucracy that we put in place to manage our water. Currently, and historically since the 1930s, the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a federal agency, has been in control of a valve off of the Okeechobee, which is that big lake that when you see on the map of Florida is that big water area that right there in the center of the state, a little bit further to the south, that drains into the Caloosahatchee River. The Caloosahatchee River goes the entire width of southern Florida. And it drains in there, and you know, when there's too much water in the lake, the Army Corps opens it up. And what happens is they don't necessarily coordinate with the state, and they do it because their mission is not water quality, it's water quantity. They're concerned about floods, not any of the other issues such as environmental and economics. So the solution is that we need to get the federal government out of the management of our state issues. You know, there's another thing. There's a consent order that manages the amount of phosphates that go into our Everglades National Park. Well, the park happens to be right in the southern part of Florida. You know, the reality is that, you know, sometimes there's going to be more phosphates than others, and sometimes, you know, that's, you know, nature is just going to deal us some cards that, you know, we man cannot control. Again, the federal government puts restraints on what the state sends south as far as water quality. If the state has control over the entire balance sheet, water quantity and water quality, which means, you know, we get to control the funding of the projects, then and the control of releases and the direction of the water and the quality of all the water. You know, after all, it's Floridians, our economy and our ecology, that are damaged if we make bad decisions. But when the federal government makes bad decisions, it's still Floridians. We need control of it. Now, this last legislative session, the entire legislative session did essentially two major fundings. One was to raise the elevation of what used to be the old Alligator Alley that crosses between the west coast and east coast of Florida, which is the old Interstate 41, to allow water to flow under it. But the reality is, you know, water's not really flowing under it, and that's after the problem. Now, our problems are further north. For that, they only funded $18 million to fix anything. The reality is it's going to cost $7 billion to restore this, and it's going to take 30 years to get it done based on their planning. Now, they've been talking about it for 15 years. They haven't done anything or nothing really measurable. What I think we need to do is if water quantity and water quality are really significant issues, put your money where your mouth is. Fund the project. Instead of giving in-state tuition to illegal immigrants that cost us $55 million, fund our water issues. Instead of taking away some of the rights of our small business owners, like they did this year with our microbreweries, give the money or fund the money to our water issues. And our funding process here in Florida, it's a year-by-year funding process. So, I mean, that it doesn't make any sense. If you have a $7 billion project that needs to be funded, allocations of money need to go more than 1 year. So we need to have a multi-year funding mechanism in Florida to allow us to get the big problems resolved. Doesn't mean that we violate our balanced budget constitutional requirement here. It just means that we make good business planning, we allocate the monies accordingly, and we don't get stuck in the cycles of this year there's another election and next year there's going to be different decisions made. We need strong leadership with big vision and the ability to make good business decisions.
You know, Rodney, I want to pop in here real quick. Michael, he's doing it again. He's looking forward to the future. And yeah. I've always said this, Michael, and I know you've got a Bible knowledge. I've always said this about politicians. They should read the story of Joseph in the Old Testament. Because we know when the good years are, and when the good years, the politicians don't seem to worry about the water. They wait until the bad years, and then they drag their feet so long nothing gets done, and then we have good years again with the water, instead of preparing for the future. And that, folks, is the kind of candidate we need. We need a bunch of Michael Dreikorns in every state who are willing to lay out and say, let's do something about this instead of talking about it. So go to MichaelDreikorn.com, push that donate button, go to that Facebook page, share the information, go to Twitter. I'm not at Twitter right now, but go to Twitter anyways and share his information. If you're in that district, call somebody. If you got somebody that you can call that could be a voter, Dan Wilson's talking this evening with us a little bit earlier. His dad is down there in that district, and we got a voter down there, and his dad's got connections, got some votes for Michael. Do that, folks. Get the word out. It is so important. Right back at you, Rodney.
Okay, well, unfortunately, Michael, our mini telethon is over. Again, we have until midnight only to lay a little bit of cash on Michael Dreikorn's campaign, help him defeat Lisbeth Benequisto, and there's 30th District State Senate race down there in Florida. We wish you all the luck in the world. We really enjoyed having you as a guest on our show over the last couple of months, and we will continue enjoying having you on as a guest as the Republican nominee and then hopefully as a state senator moving forward after the general election. Michael Dreikorn for State Senate in Florida, 30th District. Thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Count over you again.
My honor.
All right. Well, guess what? When I hear this, oops. If I'm doing this right, I got to push the right buttons. But oh, there it is. You know what that? music means. That means the one and only
Wake up sunshine.
Jennifer Cobbini is here from College
Open
Six.
Up your sleep,
Jennifer, I picked you some theme music. Hope you like it. Jennifer is the editor at large of collegefix.com. She can probably tell you a little bit more about the College Fix, probably do it more articulate than I can, but she also submits articles for www.joeforamerica.com. And let me tell you, young Jennifer, I have been pleasantly impressed, not surprised, but impressed over the last month. Here I am, working my ass off at Joe for America, writing things that I think people are going to be interested in, and, you know, most of the time people are interested in what I write because, let's be honest, Jennifer, you know me, and you know I'm a pretty interesting guy. But you seem to know my readers better than I know my readers, because whenever you put an article over there, it goes nutty. And this week was no exception. Jennifer, welcome to Conover U, and say hi to everybody, myself and Scott Osborne and all the people listening across the land.
Hi, everybody. Good to be here.
The last article that you have submitted to me, I got to admit, I was on a plane when I read it. I was on an airplane. And I'm not going to tell you the name of that airline because it's kind of, I have to wait. It's more like a punchline. Because this article, now, traditionally, the College Fix, thecollegefix.com, it deals, just like the name says, with college-age journalists and college-based journalists, people in college or people dealing with college subjects, things that are important to people in and around and involved, you know, with college. And, of course, a lot of times that veers into the subject of what? Relationships and loving, right? I just say loving because that kind of covers it all. I think you know what I'm talking about, Jennifer, don't you? And Jennifer sends over these articles that just, they make me turn red sometimes. But let's be honest, that's what we're all interested in one way or another, whether you're married or whether you're courting somebody or you're doesn't matter what age you are, there's always time, there always should be time for romance. And this article, Jennifer, I think you've outdone yourself here. I don't know, man. When I read it, I was like, God, I'm going to put this up at Joe for America. I don't know if people are going to respond. People went nuts when you put this up here. They went crazy. And it is about essentially the giant difference when it comes to loving between men and women. What men, maybe you should just explain it, but the headline, now, you don't write the headlines, do you? When people write articles or columnists, they have some goofball writing the headlines. But the headline here is Better Sex for Women Revealed. In other words, what do women get out of sex? What do men get out of sex? You know, they look for two different things in a lot of cases, don't they? And that's kind of what you're writing about. But you tell us.
Well, before I get into it, I have to do my disclaimer.
What is that?
For your audience.
What's the disclaimer? That you really didn't, you really don't know me and you don't know,
no,
you're really a man? You're actually a man?
No, but this is PG, you know, 13. PG
16. Oh, I know. Yeah. I know, but we're adults here except for Scott. He's a minor. He's a preacher,
right.
But he's a minor. He's the youngest preacher ever in the United States. That's why he cries so much. He actually wants his bank.
Well, whenever I have to use the term sex and orgasm, I just want to make sure that the audience is forewarned.
Check, please. I'm sorry. What did you say? I was calling for the check.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Don't worry about censoring here on Conover U. This is the portion of the university studies where we delve into human sexuality, and we know that you have to say sex and penis and stuff like that. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I wrote
I actually
about,
said penis just now. Did you hear that? I
that's heard
not
you.
Right. I'm not going to say that again. I'm going to not say that. Go ahead.
I don't know if you guys have, like, rules or,
no,
or what.
No, we don't. This is the internet,
okay.
So we can say. You know, there are people listening in from Tea Party communities, and they've actually pricked up their ears now. They can't wait for this. Go ahead. They're in the chat room. That I can see it. There's sweat. I can actually see people sweating in the chat room, which is weird. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Several studies, many studies, have found that
Many studies.
We just had
telethon.
Now we have many studies. Go ahead.
Many as in M-A-N-Y, many studies.
Oh, many.
Have
I got that.
Many studies.
Must be
have
that.
Found plenty of studies, a wide variety of studies, have found that women achieve orgasm better or easier when they have sex with a man that they are either married to or in a committed relationship with or are in love with. So basically, they can come easier in those kind of relationships as opposed to, like, one-night stands or meaningless sex, et cetera, and what have you. That's the long and the short of it.
So in other words, what you're saying is that when there's love involved, women enjoy sex more. Is that fair to say?
Yes. That's what the studies have found. Empirical, secular studies have found that.
But when they do these studies, aren't women just going to say that? How do we know it's true? Is there some sort of monitoring or video that, I mean, when they do the study, they're going to ask women, okay, what do you enjoy more, the one night stand or in a committed loving relationship?
But see, feminism would have you believe that a woman can enjoy a one night stand just as easily or just as much.
Do you have the names and numbers of these women, by the way? I'm just curious.
They're all the professors at the colleges.
Yeah, I'm going to do my own study, I think, on the site. Scott, start writing down numbers for me. All right, go ahead. Scott has a computer. He's a computer.
You made me lose my train of thought. What I was saying is that, first of all, I can vouch for it. Are you happy now?
Well, mark one down for love. Scott, in our study. Okay. Of course, we'll have to confirm all of this. But go ahead.
But, you know, hey, you know what? Look at, you know, women who are honest with themselves would answer this question in the same way. You know, feminism has tried to convince women that they can enjoy no strings attached sex. But women are not wired that way. You know, they don't. They are emotional creatures. And that they do get attached, and they do want that positive affirmation, you know, the commitment. That's just how we're wired. It's biological, really.
Yeah.
So,
it's part of nature is what you're saying. Part of nature.
It is. It's mother. Well, it's first of all, it's the way God created women, you know. But secondly, it is mother nature. It is biological. Even secular studies have found this to be true.
I wrote a little intro, and I said, it sounded a little flippant, but I meant it. I said that, you know, I think it's true for men too. I really do. Now there might be a much bigger preponderance for women, and I'm sure that's true as well. But I think it's true for men too. I think men I couldn't, of course, speak for anyone else but myself. And speaking for myself, sex is far more enjoyable when you love somebody. I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, there's just not any comparison. And I know what you're saying. You know, you're taking a larger subset, and you're going, well, you know, there's a lot of men that can really enjoy it and not have love anything to do with it. But doesn't that also – isn't there also a trap there where men will go, oh, baby, I love you, and then that's like, you know – almost like a tricky situation because it leads to empty, you know, I don't know. It's just, what I'm saying is I think what you're saying goes for men too, does it not?
In men in their 20s,
yeah.
Maybe not so much as men as they get older, maybe. I don't know. I'm not an expert on men, just like you're not an expert on women.
Yeah, what
but
I know
mean,
about women
speaking,
goes in a
guys,
yeah.
Finding that
you know,
out.
Guys are the conquerors, and they like to, you know, go about and do their thing. And I mean, look, godly men, that's true.
Now we're getting to where I wanted to go to. Scott, I'm sure that Jennifer, when she wasn't talking about orgasms and penis, I'm sure she was quoting, at some point she was quoting.
You just said the P word again.
I'm sure she was quoting scripture when she wasn't, you know, reading the back pages of Penthouse just now. She must have quoted scripture at some point, yes?
Well, she sure did. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your
See
wives.
That?
Just
Jennifer, I knew it. And he's not joking.
And you know what? It is a very important concept, and it is because of the way God created us. And, you know, feminism would tell us that men and women are equal. And men and women are not equal. Men have their strengths and their weaknesses. Women have their strengths and their weaknesses, and they fit together with those strengths and weaknesses like a well-oiled clock. One is not better than the other. They're designed to be a unit, and that's the way it works. And most men, I believe, that have an appreciation for God and for marriage do understand that the best way, and I don't believe I'm going to go down this line of discussion, but the best way to turn on the woman you are with is with kind words and being nice and loving. And flowers is not a cliche. It's something, it just says that you're thinking about them. And women don't just turn on. And now, guys, you know, we see something walk down the street and you know, it just kind of turns on that way. I happen to not quite be that way. I'm a little bit more feminine when it comes to that. In a relationship, what turns me on is a woman who's godly, a woman who has standards, a woman who has morals, a woman who has some thinking ability. I'll tell you, when the woman walks down the street and she's dressed with nothing on, that's a turnoff to me, because that just says something about who she is. But women function better in a marriage because of that, and men function better in a marriage because of that. And we do. We got a huge problem in this country right now because our young people are being told, just go do it with whoever you want to have do it. And it's damaging. It is not good for future relationships. And I can say this because I'm going to tell you, folks, you know, I lost my mom 10 years ago, but my mom and dad, they were their only partners. They met when they were virgins. They stayed virgins until they got married. And I'm going to tell you, there was nobody, and my mother, I hope she can't hear Blog Talk Radio up in heaven, nobody any hornier towards my dad than my mom. And it was because my dad treated my mom like a jewel. He opened the door. My mom, I never once saw my mom open up her own car door, and we talked about this with the politichicks. I never once, unless she was driving by herself and she had to get out by herself. If she was in the car and my dad was in the car, even if she was driving, she waited for my dad to come over and open the door. And that was the kind of relationship. I saw that in both sets of grandparents. And that loving, wonderful, kind relationship, and the way my grandfathers treated my grandmothers, the way my dad treated my mom, made for a very, very, and sometimes us grandkids and us kids, Stacy and I, were a little bit embarrassed, a very healthy sexual relationship up until even when my mom was very, very sick. And so there's three more for you, Rodney, to add to Jennifer. There's my mother and both of my grandmothers, as well as an aunt.
Well, that's nice that we could finally quote some scripture. But I knew that you would, Jennifer. And I don't know if you know this, Jennifer, but that Ephesians, what was that Ephesians what again, Scott?
5:25.
Ephesians 5:25 was written by the Apostle Herbie. I don't know if you know that. You might want to just put that might be in your next.
Oh,
listen, everybody. Jennifer does have to go early. She's got to go somewhere. She's got a more important radio show to do.
Oh, actually,
who knows?
Actually, excuse me. I am going to my weekly women's Bible study. I'll have you know.
Oh, that's such a lie.
That's the honest to God truth. I'll have you know.
You said that to suck up to Scott the preacher.
No, I haven't. I've had this. Let me tell you something. I'm going to say, these women have saved my life. For women out there who are Christians, if you're not in a weekly women's Bible study, get in one, because, you know, this camaraderie and the support and sisters in Christ, will get you through those hard times, and the hard times are always just around the corner.
Well, Scott Osborne does a radio show to that effect. Tell everybody about it, Scott, while we have the chance.
That's right. Tomorrow afternoon on Contending for Truth Radio, every week we've got Ladies Bible Class. Taught that class for the last 5 years in Springville, California. And when we got ready to move to Texas, the lady said, "No, you can't." So we opened up Contending for Truth Radio, and every week I sit down in Mesquite, they sit down in Springville, California. I don't get any cinnamon rolls, but we're wandering our way through the Old Testament. We're at the end of the book of 2 Kings. We're getting ready to go into Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, and then we are going to start right from the beginning again and go start right through that Old Testament history. It's so important. And we find a lot of these concepts that we're talking about tonight in Old Testament history. We can find the love God had for his people. And that is the kind of love that a man is supposed to have for his wife. And I'm telling you, men, if you're out there and you ain't getting any as much as you want, you might want to try a little bit of old-fashioned love and kindness. And I'm guaranteeing you, 100%. Rodney and I talked about this this afternoon on the phone when we were talking about the show. I knew I was going to be right on the same page with Jennifer. I think probably on a lot of issues we're on the same page. She is as right can be, and we don't need a study to find that out. God says it. Human nature says it. History bears it out. You can watch and you can look at relationships. Look at Ronald and Nancy Reagan, how he treated her and how much she loved him, and then we've already talked about Bill and Hillary enough tonight. But there's another couple of examples, and I guarantee you, if we had Nancy Reagan, boy, wouldn't that be a guest, if we had Nancy Reagan on tonight, she would be saying, amen, amen, amen.
Well, our gal Jennifer had to go, and we'll have her back next week. And that was certainly interesting. I never know what Jennifer's going to say. I love her, and there goes our theme music, and just want to listen for a little bit, and I love this song. Open up, I was just in Chicago yesterday. I should have played this during the telethon. Anyway, that was Jennifer Cabot. Please go read that article and all of her articles at thecollegefix.com. You can also, she's also featured over there at joeforamerica.com, where yours truly is the editor. Boy, are we going crazy at joeforamerica.com, Scott. We are going insane. We are getting more, we have more visitors in the last 2 weeks than we have in the last like 3 or 4 months put together. I don't know why. I guess we've just been on fire. People just love us. So I would encourage everybody, especially over there at the Tea Party Community Network. I know you're listening. I can see you all in the chat room. None of you are heckling me, though. Very, very well-behaved. Very well-behaved audience. And I don't care if you heckle us. It actually cracks me up. You know, Scott, it wouldn't be a Thursday night if we didn't bring in my doctor and my friend, my doctor if I like him, and I do. It's Dr. Mark Braunstein from Sherman Oaks, doctor in Los Angeles for, I don't know, 15, 25 years. Let him tell you. Dr. B, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Conover U. Are you there, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Well, it's been a heck of a week. There's been a lot going down. We've got people getting shot. We got people, we don't know what they're doing. And the thing that I thought might interest you and I, and perhaps our audience, we'll see. And I know this subject interests Scott the Preacher a lot because he, of course, deals with people and emotional issues on a daily basis. And I know you do too, Doctor, because I've talked with you on this subject many times. We had the death of Robin Williams, who was a internationally known comedian and actor, well known for his frantic shenanigans, and also fairly well known for some pretty open discussion about his own demons, his own problems with alcohol and substance abuse that quite often happen to stand-up comics just by the nature of their lives and their business. And a lot of stand-up comics have a I don't know what you would call it. They have an emotional background, or they have a mindset that makes them essentially live in a world, a state of mind that where they can extract humor. You know, they often say that humor is tragedy plus time. Well, the comic is there when it happens, and he has to wait for all that time. But while he's waiting, he's thinking about something funny to say about it. And Robin Williams revealed that he had been gone through quite a bad depression. And I wanted to talk to you, if it's okay, Dr. Bronstein, about depression, because I know, especially now with Obamacare, that people have always come to you for those problems, even though you're a general practitioner by nature. You've been in business for, 25 years? You've been a doctor in Los Angeles? And you've met and treated and guided and counseled more than your share of people who have had problems with depression, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. Originally, I went to med school, pre-med, to become a psychiatrist, and I had never met a psychiatrist in my life, and decided in my fourth year at USC med school that I would be a horrible therapist. Just didn't have enough life experience, and that was not my forte. But I wanted to diagnose and treat depression, so I've done that. I went into family practice where I was co-trained every day by psychiatrists, psychologists, just on the way we treated medical patients. So nearly every day, it's one-fourth of your medical board exams, psychopharmacology, and family practice. So unlike pediatricians or internal medicine doctors that you might see, they don't get such formal training in psych and prescribing medicines and making diagnoses. That's what I do half my day. The reason I thought I'd give it slight, I wanted to give a slightly different twist to the way people think about depression. And it could get really boring really fast, so I thought I'd try to do it less than 5 minutes. And
all right,
what I would say is the number one illness that internal medicine doctors, your average doctor sees in the United States about 5 years ago was low back pain. It was not the common cold, not bronchitis, not an ear infection. Pediatricians, different. But after age 18, low back pain. Now it's depression. And depression presents in many forms. It usually presents as not depression. The way it usually presents, someone will come in because their immune system's worn out. They present, they're tired, they have a sore throat, they've got a strep throat because their immune system sucks. They have no immune system left, it's worn out. And you look at them, it takes about 2 seconds to figure out they're depressed, maybe a minute, and you can just tell, and you might bring up that topic, not the first thing, but at some point. So it's not uncommon for someone to come in with a cold and leave with a prescription to see a therapist and maybe with a prescription for some mood stabilizing or antidepressant medicine. And a 3-minute visit turned into a 45-minute or 60-minute visit, and everyone's waiting in the waiting room wanting to kill me because that's just the way it is. So the thing to know about depression is that it's not psychological. Now, psychologists would argue that, but it's a neuro biological, genetic, inflammatory condition of the brain. It's a medical condition as much as Parkinson's disease or multiple sclerosis or a stroke. There's no difference. In fact, it doubles your risk of stroke untreated and quadruples your risk of Alzheimer's disease, dementia. It causes cardiac damage because the brain's swollen. It's inflamed like an infection when you're depressed.
Isn't it possible, though, and I'm part of this is my own philosophy and part of this is devil's advocate here talking. Isn't part of it, are you saying the same thing as a chemical imbalance, or when people say it's a chemical imbalance, is that different?
That's part of it. It would be like saying if your car had burned down and melted, well, did it only melt the electrical system? No, it melted the water pump, melted the gasoline pump, it melted the cylinders. It melted a lot. It went through a lot of different types of structures, electronic boards. Depression is more like that. Part of it involves an imbalance of the neurotransmitters. And now, you know, the big part of it involves abnormal brain structure. If you did a biopsy of a brain and so if someone is depressed, it's abnormal.
Why do people get it? Maybe I'm wrong about this. Why do most people get it when they are you know, older, you know, they're 30 or 35 or 45 or, you know, is it, if they have a brain defect, wouldn't it be there all the time? Why? How do you develop a depression, you know, all of a sudden you get depressed? Because you know people that never were depressed, and then all of a sudden they get depressed. How could that be from a brain defect? Wouldn't that be from, you know, couldn't you bring it on yourself by abusing drugs or by, you know, eating wrong or just, you know, I don't know.
So sadness versus depression. So number one, depression is not the disease of sadness.
Okay.
Sadness, we all know what that is. It's we go through an experience in life, we lose a job, something happens, someone dies, grieving reactions, post-traumatic, you know, something traumatic happens. That's normal life. That's what I call the big L. That's the life factor. And we all have that. So everyone knows what depression feels like, except that that's not what depression is. Depression is when that feeling never goes away, and you can't even have fun at all. There's nothing you can do. You couldn't go to Disneyland and have fun if you can get there. You couldn't. You would not have fun at your favorite movie. You'd want to just leave. It's a pervasive, unremitting, for the most part, life-threatening condition.
Yeah.
With a high morbidity rate.
But aren't these mood-altering drugs? Aren't they in the long run? Don't they make things worse in the long run?
Well,
I'm just again devil's advocate.
That's a great question. So before I would answer that, I would say one more thing that depression is also the most contagious disease in the world. It's more contagious than Ebola virus. It affects your family, your coworkers, your spouse, your girlfriend, whatever, your children. And when you think about it, it affects the whole community. And especially when you have the current administration in office, everyone's depressed. The whole country's depressed, right? No one feels good because nothing good is happening in general for this country. So there's an example of a mass, not true depression, that's more of a mass sadness. But feeling depressed is actually, acting depressed is contagious, and doing depressing things is contagious. You're treating the whole community.
Why do they call alcohol a depressant when, in fact, you know, if you're depressed and you drink alcohol, at least, like, I don't get depressed, so maybe I shouldn't use myself, but, you know, like, if I would drink a couple of beers, I get happy. I don't get depressed. Why do they call alcohol a depressant? I'm sure
so initially alcohol has two phases. It has about two phases, you can think of it in general. It's euphoriant initially. You know, you drink, you feel high, you feel better, you feel excited, you want to do things, you want to party, you want to exist. But then hours later, your brain goes through a depressive phase that wears off. You kind of feel sluggish and yucky and hangover. And so it's actually a central nervous system euphoriant initially, makes you happy, but then it becomes a depressant hours later. So it actually probably triggers these molecular switches and genes in our DNA to trigger genetically prone people to have depression if they use it.
We've all heard of this term, serotonin. Everybody, I think, has heard here and there serotonin, but I don't think anybody really knows what it is. Very simply, what is serotonin, and how does it fit into the depression conversation?
Yeah, so serotonin is one of the most common neurotransmitters in the brain that communicates from one nerve cell in the brain, one gray matter cell to the next in the outer part of the brain where the gray matter is. And there are other transmitters that are equally important, dopamine, norepinephrine, acetylcholine, and then glutamine and gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA, but there's hundreds of others, testosterone, humongously important, vitamin D, gigantically important. There's a lot of neurotransmitters and hormones, cortisol, there's steroid hormones that are important neurotransmitters. So serotonin was the first one that was recognized as being important in normal brain function and in mood disorders. And now we know that's only a tiny, tiny, tiny part of the picture. It's a genetically based inflammatory condition of the brain with an alteration of neurotransmitters, an alteration of the structure, the physical structure and anatomy of the brain. Literally kind of melts down like a car fire. It melts down. It's on fire. The brain's on fire, literally. And you got to put out the fire. So the other part to know is that depression 40% of depression is bipolar depression, which is a completely different illness than what we all think of as depression, which is called...
Yeah, what's bipolar? I hear that a lot, too.
Well,
I always think, when I hear bipolar, I always think of somebody being at the North Pole for some reason, but that's not
yeah,
it.
So, right, so manic depression is also called bipolar depression. We used to think it was featured a lot of, like Robin Williams, his pressured speech, his rapid racing thoughts, probably had insomnia, could stay up for nights without sleep and still feel pretty good, have hyper-productivity, be able to do multiple things simultaneously, hyper-creativity. Those are all symptoms of hypomania, along with just a feeling of an elated mood of being high. So that's
yeah.
the small part of bipolar depression. That's not common. That's most people with bipolar depression are depressed. Chronically,
yeah.
feel like crap. And that starts in childhood. It's rooted as anxiety, an anxious childhood, maybe depressed. But this thing is rooted in childhood. You only figure out if you interview the parents, because the kids don't remember for the most part. How was your childhood? Fine. Interview the parents. Oh, yeah, they were kind of a loner, didn't have any friends, seemed anxious, guilty, ruminated. So bipolar depression, if you give that person antidepressants, 80% of the time you will make them suicidal.
Yeah.
And more depressed.
Yeah.
20% of the time, no one knows why. But so that's the important thing to know. So people have depression, always rule out the most important thing. I always tell med students, interns, residents, and other doctors, and I used to lecture on depression for a couple of hospitals, is you have to rule out bipolar depression, and the only person that knows how to do that probably well is the rare internal medicine doctor, family practice doctor, is a psychiatrist, and they're not even that great at it 8 out of 10 times. It's hard to do.
Well, what's the test? What's the test for bipolar?
Well, the family history is crucial. If there's any family history of suicide, I always tell med students, interns, residents, other doctors, if someone tells you anyone, even their Dutch uncle, committed suicide and no one really was sure why, that patient's bipolar until proven otherwise. You don't give that person an antidepressant unless you hate them, unless you
yeah.
want them to die, unless you're that kind of person. And you assume that they only will get better with therapy and a mood stabilizer.
What's
like
a mood stabilizer? Tell everybody what a mood stabilizer.
Well, those are there's different classes, but they're not antidepressants per se. They're not Prozac, they're not Zoloft or Paxil or Effexor or Cymbalta, which I'm sure zillions of people out there know. It's things like Tegretol, Depakote. These are anti-seizure medicines.
Okay, but what does a mood stabilizer do? I guess that's what I was...
Well, it stops the mood swinginess of the bipolar patient, which is mostly being depressed, alternating feeling like crap.
Yeah, but here's my issue, doctor. Here's always been my issue. And I'm not saying anything contrary to what you're saying, because I don't know. You're the doctor, and you're the expert, and that's why I'm glad to have this conversation. But here's my problem. When people describe many of these conditions, they're describing me. I hear them describing me. And you know what, Doc? I don't want to take a mood stabilizer, and here's why. If you get rid of my, the times that I might be down,
yeah.
you're also getting rid of the times I might be up. And that's how
yeah.
I make a living. I am not,
right.
I don't want to swap out my highs just to get rid of my lows. And again, for me, it's not, I don't go into a depression where I can't get things done. I'm not a patient where this is, I don't actually have a problem. But when people say, oh, well, he's manic, he can do many things at one time. Well, then guess what? That's me. I am manic. And I do a million things at once, and I'm run around, and I'm funny, and I have a radio show, and I have a TV show, and I do this, and I race across town at the drop of a hat. And I don't want to take a mood stabilizer that will make me go, well, maybe I should only have one job. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and so that's a challenge, especially working in Los Angeles, where the film, the movie industry is Hollywood. I'm very close to Hollywood, a few miles away. Right where I am is the busiest intersection in California, right near my office, between the 101 and 405 freeways. People come from every part of Hollywood, Los Angeles, Burbank, Warner Brothers, Disney. There's a zillion bipolar patients because they're very creative.
Yeah.
They're in these creative, artistic-type professions. Not always. They can be doctors, too. They can be a surgeon. They can be a politician. They could be anybody.
Well, what do you do? What do you do for them when they say, "Look, if we cut off the iceberg, you're also cutting off the mountain, are you not?"
Yeah. So what you do is you make a deal. You tell them, "Look, you're in the case of a comedian, say, or an actor
yeah.
like Robin Williams, you make
mm-hmm.
a deal. You say, you have a dual diagnosis. You had substance abuse and probably bipolar depression. I'm assuming." You say, look, I don't want to blunt your creative edge more than necessary, but you have to make a living. However, you're going to die if you don't treat this. This is a fatal illness 20 to 30% of the time. 20% of bipolar depression patients kill themselves, complete suicide. Only a few percent of regular depression patients even attempt it. It's a disease of bipolarity, and if you don't treat that, they will have a 20, maybe 30% chance of dying from suicide.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then the other part, to die from drug addiction. So you have to make a deal. And there's also the drug addiction alcohol part and various other drugs. They die from those, too. That's different. That's in a separate category of death. So there's a high death rate of bipolar depression. It's more dangerous than cancer, and it's certainly more prevalent. Again, depression is the number one reason people go to the doctor in all of the whole country. In fact, I would guess the whole world. And so for us not to know how to treat it, even know what it is kind of sad, you know. And I look at myself and think, how come it took me so many years to even become really good at doing this, and I'm still far from perfect? It's because we don't really have enhanced awareness of this. But so you make a deal. You treat them to the point that they accept it, and then you use the number of medicines that they'll take to the degree they'll take them, and you compromise. Maybe they do more therapy, maybe they do more exercise, maybe they go to more AA meetings. You make a plan, an individualized treatment plan, like for any disease. And you try
I want to bring in Scott Osborne, our buddy that you know, Scott the Preacher, my co-host. But before I do...
Psychotherapy does not help very much with bipolar depression like Robin Williams, if he had that. It helps a lot with unipolar depression, which is 60%. For some reason, it helps, but does not cure at all by itself bipolarity. It just doesn't. And there may be an exception to general rules. So you have to use medication in conjunction.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something, and this is a personal question, but maybe you've run into it with a lot of people. I have never in my life, and you know me, I'm a real manic, you know, guy. I try to tamp it down when I'm in the doctor's office. I try to tamp it down. But you know, if you leave the room and I'm in there, I got to play with all the equipment in there. I got to do something with my time. I would go insane if I didn't. Or maybe I'm insane to begin with, but you know what I'm saying. I'm very manic. I can't drive down the road. I have to listen to a podcast. I have to, you know, I have to be whistling. I have to be, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with the lady next to me in the car. And I happen to like that about me. I don't want to lose that ever. I don't ever want to be where I'm cool with doing nothing. Because when I go on vacation, baby, I can veg out. I can just do nothing. But if I'm not on vacation, I want to be doing stuff. I want to be observing the earth. I want to be trying to have a good time. And you know what, doctor? I have never, even though I fit the profile, I'm a comedian, you know, entertainment business for 25 years, I'm all over the place. My girlfriend of many, many years almost broke up with me a couple months ago and said, you know, she said literally that. She yelled at me. She goes, you're all over the place. That was her.
Give her my number.
That was her critique of me. You're all over the place. And she's right. I am all over the place. You don't know from one minute to the next if what we're going to do is what we're actually going to do. But you know what? I like that about me. And I've never, ever contemplated suicide. I've never contemplated even the thought of it. However, here's what I have contemplated a couple times. I've contemplated my own death. In other words, I've sat and thought about what it might be like to be dead. Now, I didn't think to myself, well, I'm going to kill myself or I want to kill myself. And I didn't think, well, I want to be dead. I wasn't thinking of that. I was just thinking the concept of death and very specifically my own death. Now, is that suicidal?
No. It's a spectrum. Good. It's a judgment call, and it's an imperfect science. One day we'll have brain scans, like functional MRI scans that do at UCLA that show brain metabolism. That'll be that you can differentiate just the person whose personality traits are such that they appear to have these traits, but they're just traits. they're not the disease process. They're who you are as a human being that makes you unique as a person. We all have personality traits that are dysfunctional and functional. Some of us, to the degree, we have personality disorders, which is a whole different category. Those are separate. They're probably biological too, but inflexible personality traits that lead to our misery are different than bipolar and unipolar depression. It's just hard to diagnose. It's sort of like being asked me how to diagnose hypertension, whether it's due to one of 100 causes or not. It would take, you know, months to explain that. So it would kind of take weeks to explain how you differentiate a person who just has a lot of features, as you described yourself, yet doesn't go out and kill themselves, versus the person like Robin Williams. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, my God, I've had this much money and this much success.
Right.
His $30 million low-carbon footprint home that's for sale now with a pool the size of bigger than where I live. I could live in his pool. I'd be happy. I mean, that thing's huge. His modest lake. I don't know. You think you'd be happy, right? He was miserable swimming in that pool. He couldn't have been more, I guarantee you, swimming laps in that pool, if he ever got the energy up to do it, he was more miserable than any other time.
Well, Doctor, you want to take a call? I got a guy, Dan, on the line that wants to ask you a question. Hey, Dan, you have a question for Dr. Bronstein? You're on Conover U. Ask away.
Well, it's Dan from one of your co-hosts and on another show. But first, Doctor, do you know Michelle Buckman, Dr. Michelle Buckman, Loma Linda University?
At which university? I'm sorry, Loma Linda?
Loma Linda, yeah, she runs
I don't know her.
She runs the Department of Behavioral Medicine over
there.
They're
fantastic, a fantastic department. I have a distant relative that was a patient there.
Yeah, she's been running there for, 15 years now. But anyway,
yeah, after Lake in Riverside, they have an amazing, amazing program.
Yeah, I helped her through her PhD program over there.
Oh.
And, she's my ex. That's the reason I was asking. I have sort of a question pertaining to myself. I'm in stage 4 heart disease. I have 75% of my heart dead. I have 1.5 arteries functioning, and have
20%. What's your age? How old are you?
I'm 55.
Okay. So and what's your ejection fraction?
20.
Okay.
So it's not good. I'm borderline for the transplant list.
Yeah.
And
you're only 55.
I've had this since I was 40.
But you're 50 years old, though. I'm sorry. Well, do you have diabetes?
No.
Okay.
It's a genetic thing. My mother died of it at 48. My cousin died of it at 46. My father has it. My brother has it. I think even my dog has it.
It's
one of those things. As you know, a patient in my condition, you know, it can go either way. And how do you deal with that? You know, one's mortality. I mean, it's a situational depression. I've never been known to be downbeat. You can even ask Scott and Rodney. I'm usually very upbeat, but it does hit me.
Well, number one, I'd say you sound like a really nice person, number one. Just the fact you could I'm just telling the audience, the fact that a male particularly could talk like this about their feelings on a conservative radio political talk show to a doctor who's not even a psychiatrist is amazing. That's number one. So you're amazing. Number two, there's the tragedy of your family history, but you don't have all their genes. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. You may do well. That's number two. Thirdly, everyone has depression with these chronic diseases. Everybody. And it's not just psychological. Medical patients are the most neglected. The cardiologists neglect depression to the point that I think it's malpractice, honestly. It's more important than their ejection fraction. It's more important than their dose of Lasix or their dose of spironolactone, their dose of, when they use digitalis more often, whatever they're on. It's more important. Because if you're depressed, and it sounds like you probably have sadness, not depression, I would guess depression is not just psychological. The heart produces hormones. The heart's an endocrine gland, like a thyroid gland. The heart is an endocrine gland. It produces hormones that feedback on the brain, affect the brain. Low testosterone. Do you have low testosterone?
Yeah, I can't. What? Last time I had sex was nothing works.
Yeah, that could be from a blocked penile artery, too, the atherosclerosis of the artery. But do you have a low,
right.
Have you had your testosterone blood level measured? Is it less than 300 or less than 500?
Nobody ever checked it.
Okay. So this is a whole other thing. This is where I start to bang my head against the wall. The fact that no one checked your testosterone level, in my opinion, is malpractice. I mean, it's my opinion. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a psychiatrist. It's really bad medicine. If that's true. How? Because for two reasons. Number one, low testosterone is 100% likely in your case. It's probably morbidly low if you check the blood level of a cadaver. I mean, is that going to be that low? If you take testosterone, you have to be careful because it causes fluid retention. But cautiously, if you're low, that can cure your, that can take the depression away dramatically. I've seen that many times. Also, there's some landmark studies were done a year ago, I think they're published in The Lancet, that showed that testosterone replacement therapy, creamed or gelled or shot, weekly shots, either way, improved cardiac blood flow by 30% and improved the ejection fraction of people with congestive heart failure significantly. Now, not perfect. I'm not saying perfect. You might go from 20 to 25 or 30%, but that's a lot with testosterone. And so those are going to be, in my opinion, Nobel Prize winning or a candidate for that. Discoveries about testosterone. It improves cardiac blood flow to block coronary arteries and in people with bypass grafts by 30%. And once
wow.
The blood gets, it improves the oxygenation of the heart cell itself, microscopically of the muscle cell itself of the heart, by another 30%. So the fact you're probably not on testosterone. I'm not your doctor, but I'm saying that it should be a topic of discussion, number one. Number two, is your vitamin D level normal? It should be 60
to 100. I have no idea.
Yeah, it causes depression, too. It's going to be zero. I'm telling you, it's going to be 2. It's going to be 10. It's going to be low. And vitamin D is a hugely important neurotransmitter in children, teenagers, adults, congestive heart failure patients, heart transplant patients. It's important. It's crucial. And so you should know, you should have it tattooed on your body. This is my vitamin D level, and this is my testosterone level. Help me. And go to the person
yeah.
who knows how to do this. And then psychiatrists should be checking these levels. So you should be seen by a psychiatrist and diagnosed appropriately if you have depression. That should be treated, because that'll help your heart, too. Depression reduces heart function.
Sorry about that, Doc. I was just going to thank Dan for the call. That was really an interesting question and a really interesting answer to a lot of folks, I bet, because there's a ton of men that probably have a lot of problems that can go right to that same answer, which is you've got some low levels somewhere. Just like you have an automobile, you've got, you know, your windshield wiper fluid is a little low, your oil's a little low, your brake fluid's a little low. Why? Because you're getting a little older. You don't have to be 100 years old. You might be, 55 or even 40 or even 35, right?
Yes. So this is Conover U, University of Education. I'll tell you, 8 out of 10 Americans die from what? 80% of us die from what, I'm asking you?
8 out of 10 Americans die because they get hit by the garbage truck because they're not looking on Wednesdays when they put their can.
Cardio.
No, whatever.
Cardio.
Yeah.
Heart attack. Blocked arteries, heart attacks and strokes, mostly heart attacks. 80% of us die. So this man calls up right now. This is how common is that then? 80% of Americans, regardless of nationality, pretty much die of cardiovascular disease, heart attack and stroke, which is what he had. 20% die of all other causes put together, including suicide, cancer, accidents, everything, infections, Ebola virus. et cetera. So you think, well, what's the most important thing to prevent? Depression and cardiovascular disease. I mean, they're linked. They're linked too, because people, half the people with heart attacks develop depression within a day or two. 50%. Well, maybe 40%. 40%.
Yeah.
And if you don't treat their depression, they have a 30% less chance of leaving the hospital alive after their heart attack. If you don't treat them with emergency intervention for their depression.
Well, there's a lot of going around on the subject of testosterone. And when I say a lot going around, I mean we are being bombarded with these commercials about testosterone this and testosterone that, man. And it's hard, you know, it's hard for people to cut through what's real and what's not real. You should probably just head on over to Sherman Oaks and see Dr. Brownstein is what I recommend.
And also, God forbid, we talk about human growth hormone, how that helps the heart and how that helps people. That's the forbidden topic.
Right, and they make that synthetically now too. So it's not like you got to go out.
Obamacare. You might as well be like, you're not going to get it. It's Obama not care. This is not health care. This is Obama not care. The dumbing down of the best health care system in the world, not the worst, the best. And why not improve access to the best health care system in the world by enhancing that access? Why dummy down the entire system and cripple it piece by piece with a baseball bat? And why make it the worst healthcare system in the world and have everyone enrolled? Why not have the best healthcare system in the world and have the 30% or 20% that have no access? Figure out a way for them to have access.
Well, on that note, Dr. B, I got to say I'm a little bit depressed myself now after talking about all this. No, I'm not. I'm fired up. But the end of the show, my friend, it just goes like hotcakes here. But we're going to say goodbye to Dr. Brownstein. See you later,
Thanks.
My friend. And we'll
Thank
talk
you.
To him next week, and we'll have a new topic. And in the meantime, I am going to turn it over to Scott Osborne, and he's going to wrap things up for me. Scott, what do you got?
Well, great show as always. And I'll tell you, it's an important subject that we just talked about. And as a preacher, it is one of the things, you know, there's a lot of things I do not too well. But one of the things that I do well is counseling. And, you want to talk about quoting some scripture. There's two things in scripture that say will give you a long life. One is to take care of the temple, and the second one is do what your mom and dad say. And that is the truth. And I'm glad the doctor separated out. There is some serious issues that a person has when they have a chemical imbalance of some kind. And we're so thankful that we live, like he said, in the greatest country in the world when it comes to medical. When it comes to just regular depression, people just getting depressed because things hit. You know, Rodney, the scripture that you quoted from here a few weeks ago in Philippians, the book of Philippians is all about that. And when you go into Philippians chapter 4, especially, the person in the New Testament who had more reason to be depressed than anybody, the Apostle Paul, he was shipwrecked, he was beaten, he was thrown in prison a bunch of times. He said, be anxious about nothing in verse 6. And then he gave the key to depression. He said, think on these things. Whatever things are noble, just, pure, lovely, of good report, think about the good things. And then he went on to say, I've learned to be content in whatever the circumstance. And so there's a lot about your state of mind that's in there that's very, very important.
And I've
been very, very successful over the years in dealing with people that had depression, just using some of those basic concepts. You know, you get up in the morning, and what do you say? Do you get up in the morning and you say, my back hurts, or do you get up in the morning and say, I feel great? And you'd be surprised exactly how much impact the things that you verbally say to yourself will do those things, as well as the things that you think. If you sit around dwelling upon all of your troubles are going to get worse. If you sit around thinking about the positive things, things get better. And a psychiatrist, they'll tell you that. The Bible, it'll tell you the exact same thing. And it's important. We've got some great shows coming up.
What are we guys doing?
Bible class tomorrow at 12:30. And as we go on, we're going to hit Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson, who has been with us tonight. Dan and I are always talking about a little bit of history, a little bit of politics, a lot about the Constitution and the summer of 1787. And then, of course, Dan and I get back together with another guest we had on this evening, another caller, I should say, Jennifer Montrose, on Tuesdays for American Sovereignty Radio. And with that, Rodney, I think we've talked ourselves out, so I guess we get to say goodbye.
Good night there, Scotty. Be good. And I will talk to you many times in between now and next Thursday, but I will definitely talk to you next Thursday. Who knows? Who knows what we're going to know then? But we'll have the results of the Republican primary, won't we? Down there in Florida. It's exciting. We'll have our new primary winner, Michael Draghorn, hopefully. But you still have time. MichaelDraghorn.com. I still got a couple more seconds. Plug that plug that website. Boy, midnight is coming up, folks. Midnight approaches.